This is Mike the Birdman Dodd here, and I'm here to tell you about a great online store that I use for all my clothing needs. That's BigAndTallMart.com. Fantastic selection of big and tall sizes for all occasions and all budgets. BigAndTallMart.com is a store that I trust to put me in the most comfortable and stylish clothes for all my outings. From casual and workwear to all kinds of formal wear for all occasions, this store has it all. Big and Tall Mart also carries a large selection of printed novelty tees, and trust me when I say they have a very large selection. Use promo code GEEK10 on checkout to get 10% off orders of $50 or more. Visit BigAndTallMart.com for a great shopping experience for all your big and tall clothing needs.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. This week in geek. This week in geek.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and I am not Walter White. I am Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm joined by my lab assistant today. I'm joined by the ever awesome, the man from Ottawa himself.
Yeah, bitch. Ryan the Uneven Flow.
And yes, if you haven't guessed, we are looking at Breaking Bad as our topic show for technically the month of September, but me and Ryan have been really sick, so this is the first day we've been functional.
This is the sleepiest, most beat up This Week in Geek podcast probably ever.
Yeah, I am just utterly white. You know what? I think it's the weather. I also think the fact that my wife works with kids. She's brought home the plague several times already this year.
Walking disease factories.
Yeah, pretty much. Fucking patient zero. So, as always, This Week in Geek is brought to you by OffWorldDesigns.com. Promo code BROHOOPS. Get 10% off your entire order. Audible.com, OneUpYourLife.com, BigAndTallMart.com, using Geek10 on checkout to get 10% off orders $50 or more, and GameAccess.ca, because they provide me with them video games. Hoping you guys got your pre-orders in for PS4, because they're getting goddamn scarce now. And I think, oh right, and Starfleet, SFI.org. I think that's everybody. So, Ryan, what have you been up to since we last talked?
Not enough. My job, it's our busy season, so I've been stuck on midnights the last couple weeks and trying to adjust to that while still attempting to maintain some form of social life and going out and that kind of thing. Yippee.
I take it it's not remotely fun.
No, it's getting better. I mean, you adjust to it eventually, but man, the first couple weeks, I've just been beat up all to hell. It's been impossible to stay awake, so I've started... Now, I'm back to sort of normal. Batman Arkham Origins is coming out reasonably soon, and I got the pack with all of the original games, which I had already played through, but now I'm playing through them all on the PC because one of the places had the Batman pack up, and it was like $40 for every Game of the Year edition, and then Arkham Origins and all DLC for it. So,
holy shit, that's a really
That was a no-brainer, so yeah, with that. And so I've been replaying through Arkham Asylum. Man, I forgot how well put together those games were. It's funny, like, everything came together and was done really well, and that's something we're going to hit on with Breaking Bad, that every portion of the show, so much care went into it, so...
You know what? I have the Batman games. I'm hoping to pre-order Arkham Origins, hopefully this week. I still have a sealed copy of Arkham City. I got the collector's edition, 2 years ago when it came out?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, haven't even... haven't even played it yet. And even the first game, every time I try and finish it, something comes up. I get about halfway through it, and then I have to abandon it. Like, with me, games aren't finished. They're just abandoned, which sucks. However, though, I've been playing through the Splinter Cell series, which this past week, sad to lose Tom Clancy. I always wanted to interview that guy. Now I'm not gonna get that chance. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just really impressed with the quality of the Splinter Cell games. Although I was playing Double Agent last night. Christ, there are some frustrating points in that game. Although Conviction and Blacklist were utterly phenomenal. So if you haven't had a chance to pick up Splinter Cell Blacklist, do it now. Unfortunately, no Michael Ironside in it, which I think is a huge disservice to the series. But what are you going to do, I guess? So, as Ryan alluded to, we're going to be talking about AMC's Breaking Bad in this topic show. Going to be talking about how we found the show, you know, just talking about it in general, the characters, the pop culture influence, because it seems like everybody has done some kind of a Heisenberg ripoff in the last couple of months. The lasting legacy of the series, and that's talking about how they split up the seasons, how advertising has changed, and pretty much television will change a fair chunk because of this. So before we go any further, Ryan has put together the Just the Facts. Here they are, and we'll be right back.
The sleepiest edition ever.
So we'll be back, guys, right after this, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Breaking Bad was created by writer and producer Vince Gilligan, who had just completed work on several seasons of The X-Files. Gilligan would come up with the concept during a meeting with writer Thomas Schnauz while both of them were unemployed. They joked that perhaps they should begin cooking meth while driving around in an RV. Gilligan would later adapt that idea into a show he had wanted to create where the series protagonist would turn into the series' greatest antagonist. Gilligan would pitch the show to a number of different networks, initially scoffing at the idea of AMC picking up the series back when AMC was best known for cooking shows and reality television. But AMC would be where Breaking Bad would eventually find a home. The series was initially picked up for 9 episodes, but the 2007 to 2008 writer's strike would eventually shorten the first season to 7 episodes. The initial versions of the script were set in Riverside, California, but at the suggestion of Sony, Albuquerque was chosen for production due to the favorable financial conditions offered by the state of New Mexico, and the setting was moved. Gilligan had initially wanted Bryan Cranston for the role of series protagonist Walter White. AMC was hesitant about the casting, and offers were made to big-name actors such as Matthew Broderick and John Cusack. Mercifully, both actors declined the role, and after screening an episode of The X-Files featuring Cranston, Gilligan approached him with the role. Aaron Paul was a relative unknown and cast as drug-dealing-slash-using Jesse Pinkman. The character was originally slated to be killed off near the end of the first season, but these plans were quickly scrapped as it became apparent that Pinkman could play a much larger role during the series, mostly due to the excellent work of Aaron Paul, who would later earn an Emmy for his work on the show. Anna Gunn was cast as Walter White's wife, Skyler. Dean Norris would play DEA agent Hank Schrader, Walt's brother-in-law as well. Betsy Brandt was cast as Hank's wife, Skyler's sister, the kleptomaniac Marie Schrader. And rounding out the original cast is RJ Mitty, who played Walter Jr. The series follows Walter White as he is diagnosed with inoperable lung cancer and given a limited amount of time to live. After being brought along on a drug bust by his brother-in-law Hank, Walt sees both the large amount of money cooking methamphetamine can make and sees his former student, Jesse Pinkman, escape arrest. Confronting Jesse, Walter agrees to partner up and go into the business of cooking and selling meth with him in the hopes of raising money to leave for his family after he passes away from the cancer. The series would run 62 episodes and garner unheard of critical acclaim. The lead actors would each win multiple awards from different sources, all despite the series containing subject matter that many networks were wary and hesitant of being seen or thought of endorsing. Moral consequences and symbolism would both be central themes to the series. The showrunners, writers, producers, editors, sound workers, photographers, everybody, took great care, even going as far as using coloring on wardrobe to reflect changes to the characters' moods. The series has spawned a significant amount of homages and unlicensed work online. Due to the show's subject matter, only recently has licensed material become widely available. Shirts, action figures, fatheads, you name it, are now all being distributed both online and off. In September 2013, it was announced that a spin-off prequel, Better Call Saul, was to begin production. That series will focus on Bob Odenkirk's lawyer character from Breaking Bad, Saul Goodman, who debuted in the second season of the series. Breaking Bad had concluded its run on September 29th, 2013. It was the show's largest audience to date.
Welcome back to This Week in Geek. Thank you, Ryan, for putting that together while under the effect of tranquilizers.
It's the first time ever, actually, to pull back the curtain a bit. It's the first time I ever had to raise my own audio while doing one of those. Usually, I talk pretty loud, or at least loud enough the mic picks up everything, and I don't have to edit my own audio. But for the first time ever, I had to crank that up and then just move stuff around. And for once, I actually said the hell with taking out my breathing because I was doing it too much. There just would have been like all these blank spaces of nothing over and over again. So it didn't work out quite as well as usual, but whatever.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we don't have to be Heisenberg grade around here. It doesn't have to be 96%.
One thing I'll say, though, like I had to go through music and stuff to figure out the clips. And, I mean, I used the Breaking Bad main theme, which was obvious. But I got to use Baby Blue, which, spoiler, is the final song that plays on Breaking Bad. And going through like the music of the series, though, again, you know, so much care went into everything. Dave Porter did most of the original music for the series, but the use of actual tracks like Crystal Blue, Persuasion, Baby Blue, et cetera, all just really well done. Like every part of the show was so well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those rare shows where I think the creators, Vince Gilligan and his team, knew exactly what beats they wanted to hit with every episode. And it's not too often that you come across a show where everything is so meticulous. And that's what I like about it.
When we get into, you know, the influence or lasting legacy, one thing they had to do, or they were able to do, was they had a year in between seasons to write. And they talk about it on, I've listened to every episode of the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, that when you do a television series, usually you have to break and write every single episode of your TV show in a month or slightly more. That's a lot of work and really hard. You basically have 2 or 3 days to break every single episode and figure out what you want to hit. And Breaking Bad had the luxury of a year in between the seasons, and having that much time gave them time to think of everything, because believe it or not everything in the series, actually pretty much nothing in the series, was planned ahead of time. It just worked out the way it worked out.
Which is astounding, because it would seem like they knew how this was all going to play out years ago. I know that they originally wanted to kill off Aaron Paul's character of Jesse in the first season.
Yep.
I can't picture this show without him.
Well, the writer's strike helped that, because the first season got cut. But also, they watched Aaron Paul and they thought, this kid's really good. So, yeah, that was another thing that, you know, it turned out in their favor. Actor departures turned out in their favor. I can't remember his name. The fellow who played Tuco. Tuco was actually supposed to be a villain through season 3 and 4. But what happened was the actor was unavailable. He had taken another role on and just he wouldn't be there. So they killed him off in season 2. And we end up with Carlos Esposito, or Gus Fring, for 3 and 4. And, I mean, that worked out amazingly. And that's when the show really took off.
Now, there's a question, Ryan, in there.
Uh-oh.
When did you discover the show? Because I didn't get on the bandwagon until last year.
I watched it at the end of season 4. And this is probably going to echo a lot of people's stories. But I'd seen bits of the pilot, and it seemed interesting. But, I just didn't get the chance to dedicate any time to it. But everybody was telling me how good this show was. And finally, during the slow period at work, I was working, I think, 3 days a week and only, you know, a few hours. So whatever, I use bank time and then just sit around at home and get caught up and stuff. But I checked it out on Netflix, and I feel like this is one of those shows that proves the worth of Netflix. I sat down, I watched seasons 1 to 4 in about 2 weeks, actually probably a little under that, just blasted through it, and then watched season 5 on AMC.
I got into this series, it was either last Christmas or last August, I know that's a very extreme point, but I remember Scotty came over to my house, and he kept telling me about this show called Breaking Bad. I was like, oh, it's about this guy, he's a teacher, makes meth, whatever, and I'm like, all right, fine, fuck. I need something in my life to fill the void that Walking Dead had left, and, you know, I hadn't found a television series that I'd cared about in such a long time.
You weren't watching Game of Thrones yet or anything either.
Not yet, and I still need to do that. You know what? Before we do the next one of these topic shows, Ryan, I need to just do seasons 1 and 2 and just get it over with.
It's only 10 hours.
You know what? Breaking that down, that's not that bad, actually. I think I could reasonably do that.
10 hours per season, that is. But anyway, yeah.
Anyway, Scotty brought this over. He brought over the 2 Blu-rays, and we blitzed through that in like a day and a half, 2 days. And I hadn't done that since watching 24. 24 is the last series I really gave a shit about, and even it fell apart right towards the end. And I literally became so obsessed, and I remember watching season 5 on AMC and just being absolutely hooked. Although I think I remember watching the end of season, I think I watched the ass end of season 4 in real time. I'm not 100% sure of that. Because I remember when Walter gives the phone call to Skyler and says, I've won. Right after he blows up Fring and everything else.
Spoiler. And, no, anyway.
Yeah, we should probably put that in the episode description. Spoilers, heavy ones. You've had a week. So getting into this, I really didn't quite know what to expect because I knew Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle.
Not Babylon 5?
Not Babylon 5. And I also knew him from an episode of The X-Files, which I remember being obsessed with that show back in the mid-90s to late 90s. And I do remember his episode where he kidnaps Mulder and is driving across the desert and the cops are chasing him. And like there's like a bomb or an alien or something inside of him. I can't remember what it was.
It was a bomb, and yeah, it's what I mentioned it in just the facts. I mean, that was written by Vince Gilligan. It's basically it's how Cranston got the job after Broderick and John Cusack turned it down. Thank God.
I can't picture anybody else but Cranston doing this.
No, same with Aaron Paul. I can't picture anybody else as Jesse. A lot of the characters, the casting was that good. And I mean, they were blessed with really good casting directors. And one of them passed away while the season was running. And then the two sort of under her took over and did just as good a job again. So, yeah. And again, that points to the care of the show. I guess we're getting into the general chat now, too. And I'll say this, watching those early seasons again, if you ever watch it or even clips from them, it's really weird how different the tone was, and I mean, it's all deliberate. I mean, Gilligan described it as Mr. Chips turns into Scarface, and, you know, the first couple seasons, it's like Walt and Jesse's wacky adventures, and there's a lot more humor. The tone is very different. It's still a good show. The first 2 seasons are a lot slower than what goes on later on, and they pretty much had to be. It was all sort of set up. They had to deal with Walter's cancer and treatment and that kind of thing and his sort of slow descent into becoming a monster.
Which, that's something that, you're absolutely right, though, like how the first 2 seasons had a very different feel to them. Although, you could start to see the darkness coming, and I really like that. Like, especially right after Walt kills that drug dealer in the basement with
a bicycle lock.
Yeah, I mean, of all things, and you just see
poor Crazy 8.
The horror in his face. He's like, oh my God, I've just killed someone. And then later on in the season where he delivers that bag of explosives.
Well, remember season 2, he cried when he just sat and watched Jane die. And even season three, the episode directed by Rian Johnson, Fly, he apologizes to Jesse, and Jesse has no idea why, and he's apologizing for just doing nothing and letting Jane die. And, you know, the audience knows, but Jesse has no idea that Walter was even there. And, yeah, he slowly gets worse and worse, too, until season five, when he's won and he has no adversaries, he just goes completely off the deep end and is just outright evil in a lot of ways for the sake of being evil. It's one of the things I'm moving straight into the finale now, but one of my favorite scenes from the entire series was in the finale in his conversation with Skylar, where he finally just tells her, you know, she tells him, you know, don't lie to me again. And he tells her, you know, I did it all for me. It wasn't for my family. You know, I was good at it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's almost like that's the big thing that he wanted to accomplish in life, was to be really good, to be remembered for something. Because that scene, yeah, I really like too. I also like, I think it's in season five. It's when they're out in the desert with Hank Schrader, Gomez, and all the Nazis, and he tells Jesse about Jane.
Yeah.
I just love that, the tone of his voice, like, I watched her die.
Well, the episode before, I didn't like that scene because I am quite solidly on Team Jesse, because season five proved, like, what a person Walter is, and he's a terrible human being. And he tells Jesse that there's no reason for him to tell Jesse that, aside from just out and out spite, just to
be an asshole.
Drive the knife into him that much further. And that was just, it was still in character. So when I say it was needlessly harsh, I don't mean that it was out of character or anything like that. It just was another one of those scenes that show what a bad guy he is. And one of the questions through the whole series was, is Walter White Heisenberg? Did the cancer bring out something that was always in him, or, you know, what type of person was Walter? And I feel like in the end we got the answer that, yeah, it was always a piece of him. He was not a good person overall, but who knows? I mean, do any of us have that, you know, possibility in us? He had the scene with Hank after Hank has got post-traumatic stress disorder, and he tells him, you know, ever since my diagnosis, I feel alive.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, like it. One of the things that I wonder about Walter White as a character is, you look at him and you think how many people say, "Oh, he's my favorite character," and I wonder how many people are really looking into, other than how he really is a badass, how, like you just said, he's a terrible person. He's a terrible.
He's a monster.
Role model.
Oh, yeah. He's a horrible father. I mean, the one person who was on his side through the whole thing was his son, Walt Jr., and he destroyed that. And I mean, through the series, he has three sons. The first one is his biological son, Walter Jr. The second is Jesse, who, you know, everybody ends up as a father figure to Jesse at some point because his parents were kind of crappy and gave up on him pretty early. And then his third son is the son of Heisenberg more than Walter White, and that's Todd, who is an amoral, scary sociopath.
But he's so polite.
That's what makes him so scary, though.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing personal. It shoots her in the back of the head.
I remember watching that scene with my wife, Blair, and she's like, oh! She makes this, like, girl sound.
I remember yelling at the TV and just going, like, God damn it.
There was
one. And then you see Jesse's reaction.
There's one scene, and I think you'll appreciate, Ryan, what I'm channeling here, where Walter and Skylar are fighting, and you see Walt Jr., and they're both holding on to this knife.
Yeah.
And it looks like Walt Jr. is going to fall on it. And I just remember this part from the Transformers movie where Megatron's yelling, fall, fall! I was yelling that because I was kind of hoping he'd fall on the knife.
No,
I am a horrible person for wishing that.
Apparently. In in the grand scheme of things, I mean, like, the point of, in particular, Ozymandias, and that's the name of that episode, by the way, which was really the high point of the series. It's another one that was directed by Rian Johnson of Looper and other episodes of Breaking Bad fame. Anyway, it and the next episode were really about how Walter White was the cancer of the series, and he destroyed the lives of every single person he was in contact with, whether it be Saul or Mike, Jesse, everybody who was in his life gets their life destroyed by him.
Yeah, and it's... for a guy who started out, and it isn't until later we find out his intentions are terrible, it's kind of sad, because I think early on Walter believed genuinely he wanted to do this for his family. And
I think so too. And most villains have a reason that they feel is just to do what they do.
Yeah, and I've never quite seen a character like this come to life on TV. The only character I can think even remotely close to it, there's an episode of The X-Files, and I think it's called Musings of a Cigarette-Smoking Man. And they're talking about his life before getting involved with the syndicate. And they're telling him he's going to have to do all these horrible things, but it's to protect the people, to protect Earth, so to speak. And he's got the lone gunman in like the sights of his sniper rifle. Like, I think he's got particularly Frohickey in the sights. And he's like, you know what? Today I'm going to let you live. And I kind of, that's the only villain on TV that I've seen personally get the point where I need to do something good, or they've convinced themselves what I'm doing is good, despite the fact that it's very intently evil. And I think that's the appeal of Walter White. I think it's showing we all have this possibility of this evil person inside of us, but we're masking it in, I need to do this because of X.
I also think that Walt is partially popular too, because he's basically a nerd. I mean, he's downtrodden, and he uses science to get out of, you know, the awful situations that he finds himself in. And so a lot of people kind of want to flock to that. He's the underdog, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, finds a way out. But then season 5, in a lot of ways, turned the tables. I mean, the Heisenberg persona, he had so much, he could just do things by threats. He had so much cred and everything else. And then, the last half of season 5 took that all away from him, and he has to rely on science and luck and that sort of thing again. I mean, he tried to threaten Saul like he did earlier in the series, and he breaks down, weakened, in a coughing fit.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. Yeah, I never realized his vulnerability. And, you know, if there was one criticism I did have of the series, it seems like Walter's cancer took a back seat at a lot of points. Although, I guess when they advance the series a year and you see him so lonely for attention and you see him just changing out the IV bags.
Yeah.
That shows just how weak he was. But I always felt like it never got addressed enough. But then again, I guess I didn't have to shove it in your face.
Well, it did go into remission for a period of time. And I mean, we saw his reaction. I think it was in season 2, the first time he gets rid of it and he just starts punching the dispenser. And I mean, he was sure he was dead, and he didn't actually really plan or necessarily want to live at that point. And I don't know, the whole show has been, a lot of the show is about it turning in directions we didn't necessarily expect.
Yeah, actually there's one character arc I really appreciated going in different directions. It was Hank Schrader, Walter's brother-in-law. I like how he's this bumbling idiot in the first 2 seasons, and then you see him get progressively more and more competent.
I think he was always good. It's just they gave him situations where, yeah, he was, I don't know, there was no way to sort of put the clues together that Walter White is the guy he was looking for at that point.
But it was always the wrong place, wrong time, or he'd have something terrible happen to him. And he's a character that you didn't necessarily dislike. You liked him just because... I think Dean Norris did a fantastic job with the portrayal of him. Because he was a family man, so to speak. And, you know, he cared about everybody around him. But he also wanted to have a good time. Like, he didn't let the job bog him down.
Until he got PTSD from it.
Yeah, until it fucked him up quite severely.
It's another one of the things with Walt, too, is that, I mean, everything that happens to Hank, all the awful stuff, and, you know, eventually he just dies, all because of Walter. And, you know, we mentioned this scene where he, you know, throws Jane's death back in Jesse's face. Walt's got an awful lot of cognitive dissonance because Walter blames Jesse for Hank's death. He doesn't think he did anything wrong, really. And I mean, he even yells to his family later, "I tried to save him." But, you know, everything was set in motion by Walt. And everything that happens is his doing.
Yeah, because if he hadn't made that phone call to Saul, who would have got a hold of Todd and his uncle, things might have turned out remarkably differently. But
he definitely shouldn't have made the second phone call to off Jesse. That was a huge mistake. And obviously, he has two colossal mistakes of ego in the entire series. The first major one, much earlier, was the dinner party after Gail has been killed. And Hank is convinced that Gail was his meth cook, was Heisenberg, et cetera, et cetera. And everything points to that. And Walt, while drinking, Walt tells him, like, well, he was obviously copying somebody. I mean, that was his first huge mistake. I mean, he points Hank back in the direction. He was content to just leave it alone and let it go. But Walter's got so much ego at this point that he needs Hank and everybody to know that, no, he couldn't have been Heisenberg. And then the other point, too, was, of course, keeping trophies. And in this case, it was the book. He should not have kept that. If he just throws away the damn book, things go an awful lot better or differently.
Yeah, it's just, you could have done so much.
But Walt has an ego on him. I mean, that's a lot of the basis of the series, too. His bitterness with everything that happened with Gray Matter was a lot of that was ego.
Yeah, and I'm really glad they even came full circle to that, actually. Like, that I didn't expect, and especially...
Neither did the writers. It should be noted that the child that... episode 8 or so of the 5th season was dedicated to. For anyone who doesn't know the story, it was on the Insider podcast and a couple other places. There was a kid, I think it was like... 17 or so, I can't remember, who had cancer and was a huge fan of the show. And Vince Gilligan visited him, and he had said, like, one of the things he wanted was more of Gretchen and Elliot. This is, you know, roughly season, I think between season 4 and 5, he mentioned this. And Gilligan, in the end, was able to, you know, incorporate them in the last 2 episodes. And he did it, you know, because of this kid who unfortunately died before the last block of episodes would air. And the other thing he did, too, was he mentioned the ricin, which the writers had partially kind of forgotten about. So, yeah, and I mean, that turned out for the best as well.
And there was a moment, me and Blair are watching that, the moment where Walt goes to retrieve the ricin, and she meets up with Lydia and Todd in the coffee shop. And I forget how it came up, but we're talking about, like, what the hell's the ricin for? And then we see her put something in her coffee, and it's one of those cartoon moments where you say the exact same thing at the exact same time, with the exact same voice. Me and Blair are like, the ricin! And I'm really glad they even killed her off. Although I felt in a lot of ways she was just a middleman, didn't really have a whole lot to do with anything.
But she did. I mean, to me, she proved her role a couple ways. One, I mean, she was the big one behind killing Mike's guys. she wanted them all dead. And in the end, when Mike wouldn't do it, she tried to have Mike killed. And then the other big thing was sending Todd and Co. to Skylar's house to threaten Holly. And then not being pleased when Todd is sure that, you know, she's going to stay quiet.
Okay.
I mean, she wanted the entire White family dead. I mean, in a lot of ways, Lydia was just as bad or as amoral as Todd was. And, you know, on the other hand, I mean, it's another unintended consequence of meeting Walter White that Lydia, you know, her daughter that we saw in the one episode, it doesn't have a mom anymore, dying from poison. And it's another family destroyed by, you know, meeting Walter White.
Now, we should look at some of the other side characters in the series. One character that I grew to like and hate multiple times in the series was Walter's wife, Skylar, Anna Gunn. I think she won, like, a Golden Globe this year for her.
She won the Emmy, finally, Emmy. Which she deserved because, yeah, she did a great job. I don't know. I was never on the hating her because she was actually trying to protect the family from Walt. You know, I think the issue is that most people were on Walter's side for a really long time. And it's an interesting discussion to have with people. Like, when did you turn against Walt? And it's a different time for really everybody. And some people in the end still didn't. They wanted Walt to win and get away with it, which, by the way, was just not going to happen. I mean, he had terminal cancer. But, yeah, I don't know. It's different. Like I say, it's different for everybody. I was always sort of with her. I realized that, especially early on, she was set up as a sort of tough ball breaker of a wife. But, oh, she sort of had to be. I mean, the White family was dealt a pretty crappy hand, including Walt.
Yeah, I liked how she did try to keep the family together as long as she could, but then eventually kind of started to live for herself, too, and then became a co-conspirator in everything after everything eventually came full circle. It's almost like she was corrupted by Walt.
I think everybody was, in a way.
I'd say the only person who was never at fault was Walt Jr.
Walt Jr., yeah. And Holly.
Yeah.
The two innocents, and two of the ones that are going to suffer.
Well, he's going to get $9 million later on.
Yeah, but his father's dead. You know, he's got to live like the entire life, you know, knowing his father and probably being told about what a horrible human being his father was and how many lives he destroyed. I'm curious, too, how much of that $9 million's going to, you know, I guess having Gretchen and Elliot give it will make it safe. But I mean, until he can get that, he's going to suffer badly because how many other people are going to go after him for money or whatever? I mean, the Sharp family, I can't imagine now that they know, you know, their son was murdered. Granted, it was by Todd, but it depends on how much they know of that.
Yeah, I mean,
Was the tape ever recovered is one question, because if they don't, then they're just going to pin that on Walt.
One of the things that a friend of mine had brought up, that there's some loose ends on the series, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, I'm actually happy that there is, though. I would much prefer that than trying to answer everything. Like, I mean, obviously Jesse is one of the main ones. You know, what happens to him?
See, I'm kind of glad that's left ambiguous, or that
it was the story. It was, yeah, ambiguous. It was the story of, I mean, the show was the story of Walter White. I mean, that's the story we were told. And everyone else, in a lot of ways, is secondary. I don't need answers to everything. I loved, you know, Jess, in the end, you know, Jesse Pinkman was the character I liked the most. He was, in a lot of ways, one of the few ones worthy of any type of redemption or getting away. And I'm happy that, you know, it ends with him just sort of, you know, driving off. I'm okay with that. He didn't need to kill Walt or do anything else. He just needed to leave.
Yeah.
He leaves finally free, too. I mean, he's free of Walter. He's free of all these terrible people that influenced his life.
Do you think he'd go back for Brock, or do you think he'd just let the family?
I don't think he'll be able to get anywhere near Brock. I think by this time, remember, some time has passed. And so he's probably in foster care. I have my doubts as to whether or not Jesse, quote, gets away with things. My guess is, you know, he has to live a pretty quiet life at this point. I don't think he can be on anyone's radar. And certainly, I think trying to, you know, adopt the child of somebody who was killed in all of this is going to go well.
He's probably not much of a father figure after watching everything else happen around. Like, he's probably...
I don't know. He always had a soft spot for kids. I mean, remember the redheaded child of, what is it, Splooge and the other chick. The one dies with the ATM. He always had a hot soft spot for children, which is why, you know, the poisoning of Brock bothered him so much.
Now, one character that almost consistently annoyed me, but I enjoyed watching her suffer, was Hank's wife, Marie. And I'm trying to remember the name of the actress off the top of
Betsy Brand.
Like her, hate her at the same time. I liked watching her, especially in the last half of season 5, where, you know, she's trying to help Hank go through this, like, convincing him to go against Walter and all this thing. And there's one scene, and it's just right near, I think it's her last scene in the series, and it's the look on her face that I really, really like. The FBI agent's with her saying, "We're going to find Hank." And it cuts to her sitting in this SUV as they're driving, and just this look of utter despair.
Second last episode.
But there's something about this series that I think physicality plays a lot more into this than a lot of other series that I've seen. I mean...
Color and wardrobe are two major things, too. They change based on the character's changes. Notice in season 5, when Skylar really goes along with Walt, she starts wearing the beige and the muted colors, the same ones that Walt wears. And it's all of that was intentional. Their designer, you know, shows moods. Notice Walter is wearing the same clothes that we first see him in the series, in the last episode, et cetera, et cetera.
I was just kind of thinking there, sorry. Oops. Now there is, I don't know, would it be looking at RJ Mitty, going back to Walt kind of Jr. for a second, there's always one thing that really bugged me about the last episode with him in it.
He didn't eat breakfast.
The way he starts screaming at Walt and the way he says, "You killed Uncle Hank," but I think that's
second last episode again, but anyway.
It's just the way that he delivers that, except for the one part where he says, "Why won't you just die?" I can't think of any other series on television where everybody's so mean, I guess, so to speak. Though I haven't seen Game of Thrones, I imagine there's probably something remarkably similar in there. I've totally lost my train of thought, but I don't
know. Yeah, I don't know necessarily where you're going. I'll say this. He was somebody that for a long time, just they never they didn't give him a lot to do. And he was a necessary character, though. I mean, they needed him still. There was a couple scenes here and there. One of my favorites being when he is the father to Walter and taking care of him after he got beat up by Jesse. And I thought that was a really good scene for him. I thought the phone call was a great scene for him, too, though. And I can totally understand the reaction. I don't know if that's what you were getting at. But, you know, he hates his father at this point, and he's got a lot of good reasons to. Everybody does. You mentioned Marie. She was a character a lot of people hated, but she doesn't deserve her fate. You know, to have her husband dead and then for a year not really knowing for sure. I mean, the only thing she had was Walter saying, like, "Oh, Hank's dead." You know, they don't have a body or anything. It's out in the desert until Walt gives the coordinates. I mean, and that's part of the entire series. I mean, the whole show is... I don't know. The whole show is just everybody suffering from his decisions in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, what I was getting at with the RJ Mitty thing, I don't know. I mean, It sucks to see a son hate his father, because that's something that, I don't know, it was particularly powerful, and I guess maybe it just, it hit home a little more with me than what I thought it might have.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why I don't like it as much, because there's something personal in there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the show is you reap what you sow, and, you know, in a lot of ways, he deserved what he got, and, I mean, what he gets is terrible. I mean, the show went... I mean, that episode in that moment was when Walter White hits rock bottom. For Jesse, it's when Andrea catches the bullet with the back of her head. Man, that was so bad, too. I was really depressed. That was worse than the Red Wedding. Oh, right. You haven't seen that.
But I know about it.
Okay. But, yeah, it was brutal. And, I mean, this show, especially late in the fifth season, just tore my heart out and stomped on it.
And I can't think of any other show that's ever elicited that kind of response, especially from a community. I mean, watching Twitter, just watching all the Breaking Bad things.
Well, we're getting into the pop culture thing. Just before we leave, the one last character I wanted to mention, actually Saul. Two. Okay, three characters, damn it. that I think everybody's talked about, so maybe we won't talk about too much, but amazing work from Jonathan Banks as Mike Ehrmantraut. Loved Mike in the series, fantastic. Another guy, though, who dies just because of Walter's ego. And he knew it, too. I mean, he even said it to Walter, but because he said something, you know, harsh... He told Walter the truth, really. If he had just shut up and cooked for Fring, things would have been great. I mean, Walter still would have been a multimillionaire and everything would have been fantastic. But Mike was right. Walt had to run everything, and so he destroyed it all. And in the end, yeah, he killed Mike. Next, Carlos Esposito as Gus Fring. There's not enough accolades in the world to heap on him. He was amazing. Gus was always so cool and collected. Right up until the end, just perfectly well done. And then the last one, of course, is Bob Odenkirk, who we will see again in Better Call Saul, as lawyer Saul Goodman. Yo, when something like this happens, you don't want a criminal lawyer. You want a criminal lawyer.
Now, one of the things that I wonder with, and I guess we'll just kind of break into the pop culture influence and everything. When Better Call Saul launches as a series, I wonder, is it going to be a prequel or?
It's a prequel. They said it officially, but they waited until the episode with the Disappearer when Saul gets out of the van and Saul's leaving his life.
Mm-hmm.
They waited for that to make it official. Most people had kind of figured, but.
I think it's going to be very interesting to see all that come together. I hope they bring back his cast. I hope
Yule
they bring
and
back
Kubi.
Mike. Yeah. And I really want them I want it to be a fun series, because I think the character of Saul lends itself so much to comedy, because he was on Mr. Show, wasn't it?
Yep.
And
he was a writer for Saturday Night Live during the good years. Like, he is very good.
And
so.
Yeah, there aren't many moments with Saul that suck. In fact, there's this great parody that parodies Saul Goodman. If you look up, I think it's from College Humor or Funny or Die. It's one or the other. It's called Breaking Belding, and it's obviously Saved by the Bell. They have Screech play Saul Goodman, and his tagline is "Better reach Screech."
Boy.
And it's amazing. In fact, me and Scotty would go back and forth quoting Screech's Saul Goodman lines. And at one point he says, "Hey, I'm a fucking lawyer." And it's astounding just how funny that is. And I would hope that the series Better Call Saul stays up with the same kind of quality. Although it'd be nice to see some drama there. I just don't think the character of Saul necessarily needs to do it. It could be.
It's supposed to be a comedy. It's supposed to be a comedy. Roughly, the idea, at least as pitched, was the equivalent of the first half is actually going to be serious with Law and Order like police work, and then the second half of the episode is the Law and Order lawyer stuff. Except it's not. Except it's not going to be serious because it's Saul. And it's basically every episode will be him trying to keep it out of court because no lawyer, or sorry, no judge in the world would fall for his act.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other things to talk about the pop culture influence of this series is you look at how many other parody videos have popped up. There was a very well done one on Jimmy Fallon, a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And they hit
Joking Bad,
and it was remarkably well done. They even got Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston to come on to sit
Boo,
in the audience,
bitch.
And throw a pizza at him.
Yeah. That was good.
Although I've also seen some pretty fucking terrible ones.
Yeah, my favorite ones, you mentioned Joking Bad, that was good. Making Good is another one that was basically the opposite, the story of a drug dealer who becomes a chemistry teacher with his assistant, or sorry, his teaching assistant, Jesse. There was that. I really liked the We Will Never Ever Cook Together, Taylor Swift one. That was awesome. Somebody did a Breaking Bad Saturday morning animated cartoon. That was another personal favorite. Yeah. And then there's some compilations I love. My personal favorite being the YouTube video. It's now complete. Yo, Bitch, which is every single time Jesse uses the word yo, Mr. White, or the couple times he says Mrs. White, and bitch on the show. And it's fantastic. Much better than the terrible. Somebody did a bitch count one for Jesse, and they actually miss a bunch, which made me really annoyed.
One that I think is particularly terrible, though I applaud the effort, and I feel bad for saying this because I'm actually friends with this guy. It was Breaking Bat. And it's Toronto Batman's attempt at doing a Breaking Bad parody with Two-Face being Saul Goodman, Catwoman as Skyler, and Robin as Jesse. It's just, they're trying to sell blue gummy worms, or something equally as insipid. And I want someone to explain to me, do I not get the joke here, or I don't get it. Like, Ryan, when you get a chance after the show, please look this up. Explain to me what the humor is in this, because I think I'm...
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's fucking terrible, and I just don't get it. I don't know, but I applaud the effort anyway, just because there are some scenes in it that are remarkably well shot. But anyway, one of the things, I guess we should just kind of transition into the lasting legacy of this series, is Breaking Bad is going to change the way television is now portrayed. Particularly, I think, in breaking seasons in half. AMC kind of pioneered this.
Well, to be fair, I mean, BBC did it with Doctor Who for a while, and HBO has done not necessarily breaking seasons in half, but having like the short seasons and really long, you know, breaks in between. But yeah, I mean, we may see it more and more. I don't know.
It's something that I like and I don't like at the same time, because I'm like, man, I gotta wait a whole other fucking year for this. That pissed me off.
Sorry, Ryan.
Go ahead.
No worries. I was just gonna say, I mean, the big change for me that I'm curious about is, will networks let word of mouth carry a show? Because, I mean, Breaking Bad didn't have great ratings for the first 3 years, and then season 4 started to pick up a bit, and then 5, you know, by the time 5 rolled around, it had just exploded.
I think once it got out onto Netflix.
Yeah, like I think I mentioned this, that, yeah, Netflix, it seems like this is one of those shows that carried the service in a lot of ways, or proved
the viability of it.
Yeah, proved how it would work. And, yeah, I mean, the question is, you know, I don't think the major networks still are going to continue, you know, letting a show that's not doing ridiculous numbers continue. I think they're still going to be willing to pull the plug early. The question is if the smaller ones will, because, I mean,
by all rights, AMC/Sony/anybody involved really could have pulled, you know, Breaking Bad early in that first season where it was only, you know, just under 2 million people watching per week. I mean, if NBC or CBS had those numbers, the show would be gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's surprising just to see how many shows get a second life because of this. And I'm surprised Netflix even has original programming now. Like, I'm genuinely surprised. And I would honestly attribute the success of shows like Breaking Bad to helping fund that. Because you see how many people, I think, signed up for Netflix because of Breaking Bad. I mean, it's cheaper. $7 a month is a lot cheaper than going out and buying the Blu-rays at $45 a piece.
Or, yeah, the DVDs or whatever. Yep. Yeah.
It's just one of those things that astounds me. Another thing to talk about how the series wasn't super popular at the beginning is it had really low advertising on it. And I think they only had 10 advertisers in the first year. By the end of it, I think I heard this on the Toronto Star, or maybe it was AM640 in Toronto. They had something like 63 advertisers. Like, that series started to print money. And I remember right towards, it was right towards the end of season four. Jesse's in his house playing a video game. Rage. They premiered Rage on TV. And I'm thinking, what a weird place to do it. But because it's got the buzz and the hype associated with it, the game still ultimately sucked, but I'm sure it helped it in some capacity.
Well, one of the problems was, I mean, a lot of advertisers didn't want to touch a show that was about cooking meth. And the other problem, or not really a problem, one of the things they wanted, people think that, you know, most people watch a TV show and if a product appears or something, they go, well, they're sold out. But Breaking Bad wanted things set in the real world. They wanted as much product placement as they could, A, because they didn't have a budget, but also B, they really did want the show to feel like it was happening now. And by now, I mean roughly 2009. I mean, that's why you see Coke machines when they can use them or when they were able to, et cetera, et cetera. They want it, you know, Denny's is a place they use.
And Funyuns.
Yeah, they wanted it to feel like it could happen. They wanted everything as realistic as possible, but it was hard because so many places and products would turn them down thinking that, oh, the show is about cooking meth, no thanks.
Yeah, and I bet you those people are kicking themselves in the ass now. And because this thing was, I think, bankrolled by Sony.
Yeah.
Like, they are going to make so much money when the complete series Blu-ray comes out in November, which I already have pre-ordered.
I wonder, too, how much they get from Netflix, because you'd expect somebody, you know, from Sony would go like, gee, you know, our series is one of your most watched on a consistent basis when it comes time to negotiate a contract or something for putting it up. I don't know.
Yeah, there has to be something where they get a percentage of views and then the advertisers get something in there. Like, because I know when I've dealt with crap like this when I was in school, there's like a whole grid how this breaks down. But I imagine it's probably changed since then.
And yeah, we're still into sort of like lasting legacy with this one as well, too. But I'll note that, I mean, the merchandise is showing up everywhere all of a sudden.
Yeah, there's like Breaking Bad toys, there's Breaking Bad bobbleheads.
I see people with the shirts now on a daily basis, whereas I remember it was rare. You know, you might see somebody with a Breaking Bad shirt and it was like, wow, I didn't even know, you know, those existed, or wow, I didn't know that was out. But like now,
like one of the coolest pieces of Breaking Bad merch that I have is I have a Los Pollos Hermanos shirt and I have a picture of Walt and Jesse dressed up in chicken suits selling Los Pollos Hermanos chicken. And even you've dressed up as this character before.
Yeah, I was Walter White at Comic-Con.
And it's amazing how many people you see doing this now. I mean, I would like to. I would. Like
I had more pictures taken of myself that day than I think my entire life all put together.
That's kind of funny because it's such a simple costume.
Yeah. Hey, wait a sec. I had to shave my head and everything. Anyway, yeah, everybody knew exactly who it was, too. It was actually pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's amazing how people are just, they're flocking around this. People are throwing Breaking Bad themed parties. In fact, me and my wife did. We found a recipe, which I'll post it in the episode description, for Los Pollos Hermanos chicken. We also figured out a way to make blue meth, a.k.a. we took rock salt and added blue food coloring to it, and it looks amazing like it does on the show.
The show they use, it's blue rock candy, yeah.
And I've seen people on Etsy sell this, too. They sell it in, like, little Heisenberg-type bags. I'm trying to think what else I've seen. Someone made little Los Pollos Hermanos chicken buckets, I've seen. Someone made a cheesecake out of the Heisenberg face and everything. Actually, my friend Pierce, who used to be with the show a number of years ago, carved a pumpkin recently using a Heisenberg stencil. And it looks wow. Remarkably fucking cool. And it's just one of the things people have been talking about, and I would love to see them do something with this, is could there ever be a Breaking Bad video game? Because you look at Grand Theft Auto 5 in particular, one of the characters, Trevor, is a meth cook, and he's tremendously fucked up. And I wonder if something like this would ever translate, given the success of The Walking Dead, for example, as a video game.
I mean, The Walking Dead's success as a video game came by moving away from the TV show, though.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know if they'd be able to do that with Breaking Bad. I mean, I don't know if people would accept a video game where you don't play as Walter White or something.
Well, there is that missing year of Walt's life, but then again, I guess he didn't leave the farm so often, so to speak.
Yeah, I doubt he... Well, I mean, he never even made the trip down the road. I mean, that was made clear.
Yeah, like he'd get there and just kind of stop.
Yeah, it became a, well, I'll do it tomorrow sort of thing. But then finally he realizes that the cancer is taking him. You know, the ring slips off of his finger. He's emaciated. He has nothing left at that point. He knows it's pretty much done, so...
I would like to see more media involving Breaking Bad. I mean, part of me wants to know what happened after the series, but I guess at the same time, there's maybe some questions better left unanswered.
Yeah, I mean, if one thing every nerd knows is that sometimes showing more is not a great idea, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just leave things to... It's one of the old, like, science fiction questions, too, is how much do you leave to the audience's imagination? Because for a lot of people, what they think up is going to be more real or more cool or more fun to them than anything the creators are going to be able to do, so...
Like, I'm really hoping, for example, that in... the universe, so to speak, that Jesse gets his life straightened out. I hope that Walt Jr. grows up to be not what his father was. Stuff like that. And I hope Hank gets a proper funeral, so to speak. I guess this will be our kind of closing thoughts on this, Ryan. What do you think we learned from the series as pop culture nerds, and what do you think you learned personally?
Cooking meth is not as nearly as much fun as I thought it would be in the first couple of years. No, I mean, a lot of it, there's a few different things to take away. I mean, if you're somebody that's interested in the making of a show, you need to listen to those insider podcasts. They're basically an hour and a half behind the scene looks at, and they have one for every single episode with the people on that created the episode or acted in it or whatever. And a lot of it is, I mean, so much care went into absolutely every element of the show, every, you know, placement of the camera, everything. So there's something to be taken from that. I mean, that, you know, if you put enough effort into something, people will find it. And so, I mean, there's that. I don't know. There's been a lot of, lately, we've seen a lot of syndicated storytelling or storytelling of, you know, big arcs in media. So I don't know that it's moved that forward at all. But yeah, and I mean, this series asked a lot of questions about the protagonist, you know, who was Walter White really, what was he about, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. The show was really good. It's hard to dissect it. Like, I haven't gone back and started watching the show or anything again. I plan to at some point. There's an awful lot of people who are really comfortable already saying that this is the best show ever. I'm not there yet. I certainly think it may very well be the best show I've ever watched, but it's going to take some time to digest. It's weird having watched an episode last week's and there's none this week. Like, I'm not thinking about what's going to happen next or anything. There is no next.
And that's kind of sad, because I'm sad that the adventure's over, but I'm glad that I was there to see it. One of the things that I'm going to walk away from this is you reap what you sow. And you have really... the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I don't know, I've never seen it quite portrayed so well. And obviously, Walter White is not a good role model. However, though, there was an article that I had up on my computer, and I don't have it up anymore, but it was something like what you can learn from Walter White in terms of branding for yourself. And it's really well written, despite the fact we've told you everything in this podcast. Don't be like this guy. Personally, I think I've learned the importance of family, because the fact that you can have someone turn on you so much where they want you to die is, I don't know, there's just something about that that really, really, really spoke to me. And I hope Vince Gilligan's next show is just, I think it's called Battle Creek or something. It's set in rural Michigan. It's about two FBI agents or something similar like that, or cops or something. So I hope the characters are there just as powerful. And this really showed me the power of the medium. Like I said, I haven't cared about a television show like this really ever, where I'm yelling at the TV or I'm like, oh my God, please don't do that.
It's one of those television versus film discussions too, because I mean, you know, TV, you've got so much more time to explain and show everything. And Breaking Bad took that and ran with it big time. Whereas, you know, if they had done it as a film or a series of film, you only have a finite amount of time. And it was another one of those great examples of, and we've got a few of them on television, where, you know, this is how the medium should be used. And there's a few others, you know, Mad Men, Boardwalk Empire, et cetera, that use the medium really, really well.
And I really hope this will make network television step up their game too.
Yeah, it hasn't really so far, but yeah.
I think after seeing some of those numbers come in from the finale, which was over 10 million, although I don't think it was as much as MASH.
No, not even close to MASH. MASH was like above Super Bowl level, but
holy shit.
You're also talking about, you know, it is on AMC. This is a channel not everybody gets. I'd be curious to see the numbers. You know, they've got ways of tracking piracy and online feeds now. I'd be curious to see what they do there. Because, I mean, the average episode of Game of Thrones, when you add in all the illegal downloading and everything and streaming that goes on for it, every episode is close to 25 million. I got to assume Breaking Bad is right around there, if not higher.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for us on This Week in Geeks Topic Show. Like I said, big apologies that this is a couple of days late, but we're semi-functional now, give or take. Coming up on the show this week, I'm not entirely too sure. I know I maybe have some interviews scheduled, but I'm still waiting for those to be confirmed. I will be doing another Halloween special with Scotty and James Rolfe, the Angry Video Game Nerd, talking about Universal Monsters. The Mummy, the Wolfman, Dracula, you name them, we're going to be talking about them. And
Universal Soldier the next year.
Oh. Yeah. Jean-Claude Van Damme's a bad guy. That's Spendable too. So I'm not quite sure what's going to be coming up this month, just because it's busy. I hope we're going to be doing something on the Friday the 13th series, talking with the directors of the new documentary Crystal Lake Memories, based upon the book which came out a couple years ago. So yeah, hopefully just keep watching the site. There should be another Ponyville, more Future Imperfect coming up this week. So lots of good stuff. Make sure to stay tuned. Ryan, are you still doing your podcast with Spada?
We haven't been able to, like, get together at all, thanks to my schedule. Woo! Because I'm working at 8 p.m. every night, so it makes it tough to record stuff whenever he's got a day job.
Well, hopefully we'll see that return sooner as opposed to
later. Yes.
So, anyway, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for us. So, we have been...
Ryan the Uneven Flow.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I don't have any clever sign-off today.
Sure.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh, freak! Die, 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 die! Holy crap! Whoa, whoa! Whoa, my god, whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.